Good morning, Tucson. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios with me, your host, Zach Yenser, for Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Every day here, weekday, drive time, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Jam-packed show, even more than usual. I'm looking forward to jumping right in a second. To kick us off will be my conversation with Jim Kumon, the Executive Director of the Incremental Development Alliance, a national nonprofit providing training on smaller-scale development, missing middle housing, how to empower locals to strengthen their neighborhood through localized housing development. Looking forward to that conversation in light of everything going on. We'll be talking at the bottom of the hour with Taylor. He is the CEO of Sentinel Brewing Company, and he had a very interesting commentary yesterday at the Pima County Board of Supervisors meeting about the 15 to 17 guidelines that the county has set out and is under a lot of scrutiny regarding restaurants reopening. And then Kathleen Erickson, to top it all off, of the Downtown Tucson Partnership, we'll talk about the $245,000 that has been raised through their gift card program to infuse capital into downtown businesses, small businesses that are struggling from COVID-19. So that is our show today. Buckle up, strap in. It's going to be a busy one. And without further ado, because he is on the line and we have limited time, I want to jump right in. Jim Kumon, the Executive Director of the Incremental Development Alliance. Jim, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
So I've got a lot of questions for you, and I know we're only going to get through a few of them, but the name of your organization, let's start here, and I want to talk to you about the history of housing and development in America, really post-World War II. But when you say incremental development, define that for us as we jump in. What is incremental development?
Absolutely, yeah, and it's in the name, but there's a lot of ways to think about it, both with time and space and the physicality, and so to give a couple different ways to define it. Incrementalism is a process that is tied to time, but we also are really focused on small scale buildings. And what is that? Well, we typically are looking to talk about small scale, meaning buildings that are between 1 and about 20 residential units, between 500 and about 10,000 square feet in size. And you know, a typical house might be 1,200 to 2,400 square feet, a single-family house. So we're talking about buildings that are in that range, but smaller, and in that range, and a little bit larger. Right. And we deal in both commercial, residential, and mixed-use types of buildings that are, in many cases, the development pattern that we had pre-World War II, where we had a lot of mixture of those types of buildings. And so those two things, the incremental thought process of how places develop over time, and the small pieces, the small buildings that we use to do that, is how we kind of glue the two ideas together.
You know, Jim, you talk about how, and I want to touch on this next, how times have changed, and that means that the local smaller scale developer, we're talking individuals, neighbors, people who used to develop this kind of housing, really are a rare breed. And we're talking duplexes, triplexes, you mentioned some of the different kinds of development, Jim, but really, like right now, when you drive the streets of Tucson, Europe, and Minneapolis, if I remember that correctly, you drive around and you see a lot of either single family housing or these massive apartment complexes, and not much in between. And we've gotten used to this style of design, but it didn't used to be that way. Tell us a little bit about what happened after World War II that shifted how we designed housing and buildings and who got to do that. And we'll keep going from there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the big shift that we're speaking of here is the shift between a human-scaled built environment and basically an automobile-scaled built environment. And those are two very different scales of how we design our infrastructure and how we spread our uses. One of the big things that happened after World War II is we decided that use separation was one of the most important things about how we would plan our cities and shape our countryside. And so those two things put together, the separation of uses and that separation happening at the scale of a car and at the speed of a car, changed the way we develop things to largely being single-use types of developments at a large scale. You have single-family house subdivisions. You have office parks. You have industrial parks. Larger-scale things, mostly driven by institutional-scale capital, not mom-and-pop on a main street getting their family members or close friends to invest in a building, but an investor from someplace else providing capital for a return in sort of a transaction that was largely mostly on paper. And so that shift in the way we did things and the various federal subsidies that we had to support that coming and guarantees in many ways. So the advent of the 30-year mortgage is not a thing that we had really before World War II. And people had to put large sums of money in down payments to get loans from a local bank in the first half of the century, 20th century. So that shift in the availability of capital and the availability of resources being put into a new set of sewer and water and highway infrastructure allowed it to be possible to develop in a very different way than it was ever before.
You know, Jim, I want to jump in because you are making something that I think gives a lot of people heartburn, and rightly so. A very straightforward answer. We're talking with Jim Kooman, the executive director of the Incremental Development Alliance. You know, I live in a neighborhood that is rapidly changing, Jim. I know you are working in those neighborhoods all the time. One of the things I hear is, hey, look, as neighborhoods are either redesigning or revitalizing or redeveloping, whatever word you want to use, a lot of the new stuff, which often is of a bigger scale, you'll hear this, it doesn't look like the rest of my neighborhood. And the reason, one of the reasons for this, Jim, right, is because our zoning and how we capitalize development is use-based, as you mentioned. It's not form-based in the sense that it's, we've built a system, whether it's capital or zoning, that really doesn't allow people to design at a smaller scale and to design and to build at a scale and a form that matches the neighborhood. Is this an answer to the question that a lot of people ask and are asking really in a city like Tucson right now?
Absolutely. Well, and Tucson is very unique in the state of Arizona as being, you know, essentially the oldest big city, right? People forget that Phoenix, you know, has a Carnegie Library because they were that small in 1910 when Carnegie was handing out little libraries around the country. You had to be a pretty small little place. And so the built pattern of Tucson really is one of the most robust places in terms of seeing this kind of fine-grained neighborhood scale and lot by lot of different types of buildings not being restricted to saying, yep, we're only going to have these 20 blocks be nothing but single-family houses. We didn't really have a culture of building that way previously. And so absolutely, the statement you made is very much true in most places of the country, and the challenge with unwinding the system of finance, zoning rules, and building codes, which is largely what we spend a lot of our time doing at the Alliance, is trying to help people understand those thresholds, right? At what point do you go from a building that a home builder can build easily to a building that needs a sprinkler system and fancy commercial financing, right? Stumbling into that choice as opposed to knowing clearly when somebody who might be wanting to do this work can step into that is important because finding out you need a sprinkler system after you already gone way down the pathway in a building is a cost surprise you don't want to find out that way. And same thing about, I want to get back to something you kind of mentioned earlier, this missing part between single-family houses and maybe a 4 or 6-story building you might find near downtown or in a neighborhood district area near another institution. And the reason we see a lot of 4 to 6-story buildings is a building code threshold, right? right? You can build up to six stories with wood frame construction. Mm. At a seven story, magically, you have to turn everything from floors one to six into steel. Mm. And so that rapidly changes, the cost of that base building.
Right.
So at that point, when you're going to build a steel building, you might as well 10 or 12 or 15 more stories, right? So there are these thresholds that are sort of deep in the technical land of our built environment, and the real challenge that we have as a society is that these rules and regulations all, in many cases, were set up separately. They're sort of siloed. Bankers and investors work in the financial world. People in city planning and economic development talk about rules and use and where things can go. And then we have folks who are in the building code departments and people who are architects and engineers and folks who sit on committees to decide what our building codes should be. All those different conversations happen separately. And the only place they ever come together is when, in this case, we can talk about a small developer has to sit down, read the zoning code, read the building code, hire people to help them do that, navigate what local financing is available to them, and somehow make a thing out of that that their neighbors are going to like and they want to own or sell, right? It's not really complex in the sense, but it's not easy because of the lack of coordination between what a community may want and what the rules in that place make it easy to do. And we're always right. encouraging places when we're hired by cities or foundations or local governments to come in and say, hey, we want to see something happening that's not happening. What can we do? Hmm. I said, make what you want the path of least resistance.
Right.
No one's going to walk on burning coal to get to the pretty picture in your community's master plan,
right?
Right? They're not going to do that, right? If it's hard physically, if it's hard financially, and it's hard to put a team together to do all those things, you're going to find folks will make a decision to build something else.
Right.
And the question is, in your community, what is being built the most? Is probably the answer to that question right now.
Huh.
The things you're getting the most of are probably the things that you've made it easiest, either by design or by accident, to build.
Jim, this is good stuff. I want to pause there because it feels like a good place to kind of pause and go to our first break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll do part two of this. You and your team are going to be in Tucson a little bit later in this year, early October 6th at this point, to help a community of some of these local developers and neighbors and organizations figure out, hey, how do we shape what we want? And how do we make that pathway easier? So I'll plug that again at the end of our interview. But this is really like the kickoff conversation around how do we shape what we want, and what are the challenges, and what are the opportunities there, and how do we create and fill in that missing middle housing with local neighbors, individuals who kind of are repowered to do this again. That's our conversation. When we come back, Jim, I'd love to talk about what are some of those ways that you've seen that done. And also a big conversation in Tucson right now, politically and policy-wise, is gentrification and displacement. How does all of this fit into that conversation in terms of Tucson being an extremely historic place? How do we consider those pockets of infill and these areas that are undergoing redevelopment? How do we manage all of this really well? And how is this a solution to some of those really gnarly problems that most communities really haven't solved? As you can tell, we got a lot more to talk about with Jim Kumon, the executive director of the Incremental Development Alliance, right after this very short break. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Tucson station for local news and talk. 1030 The Voice.
Vantage West Credit Union proudly stands with the communities we serve during these unprecedented and trying times. It's in these moments where strong communities thrive by working together. We are proud to live in a place where we help each other, even in the midst of the most difficult of circumstances. We will emerge more connected and more prosperous than ever before. Vantage West has been here since 1955. We're here now, and we will get through this together. Vantage West Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
1030 The Voice. News from inside the Beltway.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt on the next Hugh Hewitt Show. Mark Zuckerberg joins me. Facebook is, of course, a giant among giants in Silicon Valley, has a central role in the pandemic, and causes a great deal of unrest among privacy advocates and antitrust theorists, as well as, hey, I just like my Facebook. I'll talk with him on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Weekday mornings from 10 to noon on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yentz. We're on the air for another few minutes with Jim Kumon, the executive director of the Incremental Development Alliance. When was the last time you met someone who built a triplex or an independent shop and lived upstairs, or you drove in to visit a friend, they were in a triplex or a duplex? How come new development rarely seems to fill in or fix up existing neighborhoods? Times have changed, and sadly, that has made the local small-scale developer a rare breed as we shifted after World War II from either single-family housing or massive multifamily projects. Here in Tucson, we're undergoing a season of revitalization, redevelopment, gentrification, displacement. A lot of it comes back to the fact that men and women don't have the same opportunity to really shape their neighborhood and to develop and design it in a way that is form-based, not use-based. We've gotten into a lot of detail. Jim, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left here. what is the impact of this on conversations like gentrification and displacement, which we hear a lot about in Tucson? And then we know housing can be a powerful recovery tool out of COVID-19 and the recession that we're in because of it. Tie that together for me and tell me why this is such a valuable conversation incremental development is right now in Tucson.
Well, you know, one of the things that was a difference in the way that we used to lay out our cities, and the core of Tucson is laid out this way. We used to do things that were very skinny. We used to divide property up into very narrow pieces, and we did that in an era when we didn't have access to capital like we do in this day and age. We didn't have long-term, relatively low-interest mortgages. Now, interest rates gone up and down over time, over decades. And so you had to only take a slice that you could really afford, and you weren't going to be able to amortize that affordability over 30 years, right? You're going to be affording it over 5 or 10 years. And so people had to take a small slice, and they had to slowly build onto that slice over time. And that's what made it sustainable, because we got into a mortgage crisis a little over 10 years ago now, because a lot of people were basically given more ability or were given a loan that was beyond their ability to pay. And the question is, how do we get into a system that incentivized that, right? Well, there's a lot of answers to that, how we came out of the last recession. But the point here being is that a lot of people had a chance to get in the game, right, to whether own real estate or own a building if they're a small business owner, because the slices we made were small. After World War II, when we started building around the scale of the car, those small storefronts, right, 25 feet wide, owned individually up and down a main street, turned into a similar physical manifestation. You know, there were still storefronts with windows with stores in them, but they were instead, you know, in a 150 or 300 foot long shopping center, all owned by one landlord, right? And so the shift in, you know, a commercial structure like that, and you can see that right now, the essential businesses that are going to make it more easily through this crisis are the ones who own their own real estate, right? If that restaurant that you go to, or that hair salon, or that place that you like to go to that's a small business owns the property that that business is in, their ability to quote-unquote negotiate with their landlord themselves, right, is now they still maybe have a loan, they have to make a payment, but there is a relationship there that allows you to get through tough times. And that's one of the powerful pieces of incrementalism for commercial properties. And the same thing goes for residential properties. My family is from Detroit originally. My grandparents lived in a duplex. I didn't even understand really what a duplex was as a kid growing up. I just thought Clara was the lady who lived upstairs. Little did I realize that in the 60 years that they lived in that house, what that second unit's income on the second floor did for my family and the wealth that it helped build for so many people of really modest means growing up in ethnic neighborhoods in Detroit. You know, Detroit was a city of stacked flat duplexes, and that physical form allowed many people to both rent and own in a way that was accessible on, you know, 30-foot wide lots. Those are the kind of physical parameters through zoning and other things that you've mentioned don't exist today very easily. And we have it all still, but we've made rules retroactively that say, you know what, 30 feet's a width of a lot that's just too small to build on. Like, I see rules like that all the time in zoning codes across the country. Yep, 30 feet, can't build on that.
Right. No, Jim, this is fascinating stuff. I mean, in the sense, like, we either made rules or remade rules that have changed the game. And what you guys are trying to do is help make the game work again for the type of individuals you just mentioned. I think on the residential side too, and I could do a whole hour with you on this, Jim, but our time is just going by so quickly, as I knew it would, in our neighborhoods, as our neighborhoods change, right, as generations change, as dynamics in the neighborhood change, if we can, again, help individuals like you and I figure out, hey, how do we how do we get in the game in terms of owning a home, building a home, building a duplex in a neighborhood? That allows for a greater diversity of people to be in those neighborhoods. And not only does it fill in more infill, which has an economic benefit, but it also makes that neighborhood more sustainable, more resilient to rapid change that we see is creating a lot of policy and political problems in our city, but around the country. The impacts of what you do to help people with the tangible nuts and bolts that you hinted at in this interview is huge. And in Tucson, again, on October 6th, there will be a day-long workshop where you'll get to bring some of this here to Tucson to help local individuals or organizations here figure out how do we fill in that missing middle. I've got about 40 seconds. Jim Kumon, Executive Director, Incremental Development Alliance. Any final words or places that people can go to read more?
Yeah, well, incrementaldevelopment.org is our website, and the goal of the training class this fall is to help with this idea of project formation, whether it's taking an existing building and figuring out how you can fix it up, whether it's doing an infill on a lot and using a 30-year mortgage to finance the permanent, you know, use of that structure, or you're maybe a small business owner and you're trying to figure out what to do with something that came out of this crisis. Those are the scales of building, the types of folks we're looking for. You don't have to have any experience doing this work. And in fact, some of the best people, you know, who do this work have relationships and no technical knowledge. And that's what we're here to provide, is that technical knowledge to help both individuals and the cities that they are in to make this put back together.
I love it. Jim Kumon, thanks so much. And we'll be in touch. We'll be right back, Tucson. Don't go away.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Over the last couple of weeks, there have been a variety of both state and federal emergency funds set up to help individuals and businesses survive COVID-19. to make sure you have the best opportunity to access these resources and apply for business loans and more. You're encouraged to get your taxes in and to do it with the help of a tax professional. Give Shanae and her team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes a call at 520-838-0856 to get started. Tell her you heard it on Tipping Point for 50% off.
How would you like a hand in shaping the future of transportation in Tucson? Well, the city's developing a plan called Move Tucson to identify and prioritize transportation projects over the next 20 years, and we want to hear from you. Head to movetucson.org to share your vision for how to improve Tucson transportation, no matter how you get around. How do you want Tucson to grow? Go to movetucson.org and let us know. Again, that's movetucson.org.
WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going.
Honestly, provocative talk radio on the Lars Larson Show.
For the last few weeks, the president, who you know I support, I've disposed my dog in the fight. I have also told my audience I will feel free to say when I disagree with him. But the president, it appears, has been in a bit of a quandary. On one hand, he says we're concerned about having more cases in the country. On the other hand, the president today says it's time for this to end.
Weekday afternoons from 4 to 6 on 1030 The Voice.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson, welcome on back. You're in the 1030 The Voice studio with me, your host, Zach Yenser. You're listening to Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, talk, and conversation about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. And I'm looking forward to talking to a local business owner in town about his response and concerns regarding the Pima County Board of Supervisors guidelines that became temporary regulations on restaurants, 15 to 17 guidelines that we've heard a lot about out and about in our community as we've opened up the state more and more since COVID-19. Taylor Carter is on with me for the next few minutes. He's the CEO, Sentinel Peak Brewing Company. He spoke at the Pima County Board of Supervisors meeting yesterday morning. I happened to see a clip of his thoughts yesterday evening and said, Taylor, you got to come on. I'd be curious to get your thoughts as we process this from all sides of the issue. Taylor, you're live and on the air again. Thank you for your time. How are you today?
Absolutely. I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me on this morning.
Yes, wonderful. So, I mean, we've talked to Supervisor Valadez on this show. We've talked to Supervisor Steve Christie on this show. We've really walked through these 15 to 17 guidelines pretty in depth. But I wanted your perspective as a business owner. Again, you spoke yesterday as a concerned business owner. I think what you said to start was you are a bar, you are a brewery, you are a restaurant. You're everything all in one over at Sentinel Peak Brewing Company. And you feel like some of the guidelines that became temporary regulations don't fit and don't work. What's your perspective? Tell us what's on your mind.
Yeah, absolutely, Zach. You know, the problem is that it's not an even playing field. The restaurant industry in general has been marginalized with a lot of rules and regulation, over the years. And now with, COVID hitting and the shutdowns, we've been crushed even more. And specifically in Tucson, we have a very large population of restaurant owners that are small mom and pop organizations. We're not big corporate. We don't have the big fancy backers or anything. So it's just us trying to do the best thing that we possibly can. And one of the things as a restaurant person that we know is that if we don't have good food, if it's not clean, if it's not sanitized, healthy, if there's problems, we're not going to have a business. That's just a fact. I mean, that's whether there is a virus going around or not. And so restaurants in general take very, very high standards as far as their cleanliness and making sure that staff is healthy and safe. You know, and of course, in Tucson, we follow all the Pima County regulations and the state regulations and the federal ones. And many of our employees at Sentinel Peak have all the ServSafe certifications to be able to serve and understand what's needed. But right now, we've had more regulations that's been put on top of us. You know, the governor came out with some rules for opening, and many of them made sense. You know, some of them still hurt small businesses, but it's what we're doing. Unfortunately, Pima County has decided that they needed to step in and that the governor's rules were not good enough. They're good enough for everywhere else in the state, but they're not good enough for Pima County. And so they need to put in 17 more rules. Now, naturally, they originally they wanted to get these vetted by the restaurant associations in Tucson, the Tucson Chamber of Commerce, the Arizona Brewers Guild Association. And so it seemed as if they were listening to a lot of the restaurant owners out there. And we all made our comments on the original drafts that before they happened on the 15th. But unfortunately, it seemed literally like it went out on deaf ears. We made comments about the changes that need to be done. The Arizona Restaurant Association took some very hard stances on numerous items and gave very valid points on why they made no sense, why they didn't do any good for health or safety. And it literally fell upon deaf ears again. So here we are. We are now a week or so out from opening, and we're still fighting these regulations that many of them are not enforceable, and many are saying that they're illegal, especially some of our state representatives that are going against this right now.
Yeah, Taylor, I'm curious to, because you mentioned a couple that were of concern, and we're trying to get all perspectives of this and even the broader COVID-19 issues on this show, hearing from the public sector, hearing from the health community, hearing from business owners, trying as you are to make sense of what's all happening here and what is the best possible outcome for everybody, which is why I wanted to have you on the air to get your perspective on this. And your background is in health and emergency, and so I know you come at this as well from a health, you know, a health conscious perspective. Give me two or three of those 15, 17 guidelines that are of most concern to you as a business owner that maybe sounded good on paper but isn't working in practice.
Absolutely. You know, like you said, I'm a retired paramedic firefighter. My other partners are still active duty firefighters, so we understand health and safety. Believe me, we very much do. But you know, some of the things that look good on paper but actually don't really make sense in the real world, we'll just kind of go down some of the list. The wellness checks for third-party vendors. Now, for our own employees, that's, you know, it's a little bit tedious, but it's not that big of a deal. We can take temperatures, we can log it, and we were doing that prior to the mandated codes that came down. But when they add in third-party vendors, so you're talking all of your food purveyors, all of your liquor distributors, all of your maintenance people, all of your guys that do CO2 refill, you know, numerous vendors that come in and out during the day. And the problem is, we're in Tucson. I mean, today's not too bad of a day, but later on this week, it's going to be, you know, 100 so degrees outside, so we have guys that are rolling CO2 bottles in from the outside and, you know, coming in off of a hot parking lot, and I have to make them stand at the door, take their temperature, and say, ooh, you're a little hot. I mean, what do I do? Do I make them stand outside more? Do I stick them in the walk-in? You know, and even more so, you know, besides myself working in there or my partners, my employees are not healthcare professionals. They're not trained on this. You know, so it puts us in a very unusual position on that one. You know, the second issue of, you know, gloves, masks, PPE, which they keep saying PP and E. I'm not understanding what the and is for, but PPE, personal protective equipment, right there. You know, gloves are a great idea. It's more of a show of what you do. In the fire department and EMS, we wear gloves because we're on scene, and immediately we take them off afterwards. But if you're dealing with multiple people in a restaurant, are you supposed to change gloves after you interact at every single table? It just doesn't make sense. washing hands is the best guideline to do it. I mean, it's CDC guidelines right there, the state guidelines. Wash your hands. And that's always been a practice that's been in place in our restaurant and numerous restaurants. So the gloves are just silly. And even more so if you're worried about it on a environmental scale. I mean, hell, we got rid of straws because there was one viral video of a turtle that had a straw up the nose. What's going to happen when you get a bird stuck in a glove from all these thousands and thousands of gloves everywhere? You know, number four, they wanted to have electronic and regular notices at the doors. That just is ridiculous and redundant and causes business owners and restaurants to have to go out and purchase an electronic board now. A lot of these, they seem to be backing down on quite a bit.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, which is great. You know, two of the other things that are absolutely dumb is RSVPs that are needed. That is ridiculous. If we're worried about health, I mean, then, you know, Costco, they don't RSVP to come in, but yet you have to RSVP to go into a restaurant. It makes no sense. I understand they don't want people congregating, but that's not happening. And then one more that I'm going to quickly touch on is the bar tops. You know, apparently if a table is set at 36 inches or higher, it is dangerous for COVID. But if it's below 36 inches, then you're perfectly fine. So they wanted to get rid of bar top seating. I believe they're going to be backing down on that one also.
Yeah, Taylor, I have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before the next break, but that's where I wanted to go. You segued there perfectly. Where do you as a business owner hope that the county goes from here in terms of balancing public safety and also economic health as well? What's the best case scenario in your mind?
The best case scenario in my mind is if they scrap all of these. You know, going by regular Pima County health and safety code is great. It is very in depth, and then adding the state mandated from the governor is also very in depth. If it's good enough for the rest of the state, then it's good enough for Pima County. We don't need more regulations on here. What we need is assistance, and what we need is Pima County to back off because the public idea that they're seeing is that for some reason restaurants are scary, and they're not. Restaurants are safe, and we need to have that back in the public eye that restaurants are safe and we serve safe food, and it's a good place to be.
Taylor Carter, the CEO of Sentinel Peak Brewing Company, thanks for coming on and thanks for sharing your perspective on this. Again, I thought you had a very clear explanation of what was on your mind. We're trying to get all perspectives here on Tipping Point. You have a couple locations. Let's end on this, Taylor. Where can people go? Speaking of Sentinel Peak Brewing Company, where can people go and support your business if they feel comfortable to do so?
Absolutely. Our Midtown location is at Grant and Swan. On the southeast corner. We also have an east side location at Tankerberty and Catalina Highway, and we are open for lunch and dinner. We do carry out and delivery, and we have a great website. It's www.brewtucson.com. That's brewtucson.com has our menu, and you can order directly online if you want.
Taylor, thank you so much, and thanks for sticking it out as a business in Tucson. You know, over the long haul, our success depends on your success, and so we got your back in terms of supporting your business, and hang in there, and we'll get through this together. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for your support.
That is Taylor Carter. We're going to come back from a short break. Kathleen Erickson, the CEO of the Downtown Tucson Partnership, will be on to talk about their efforts to infuse $250,000 worth of capital into downtown restaurants and retail. Big story. I'm excited to share it here on Tipping Point. We'll be right back.
The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Vantage West Credit Union proudly stands with the communities we serve during these unprecedented and trying times. It's in these moments where strong communities thrive by working together. We are proud to live in a place where we help each other, even in the midst of the most difficult of circumstances. We will emerge more connected and more prosperous than ever before. Vantage West has been here since 1955. We're here now, and we will get through this together. Vantage West Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Wednesday during the noon hour, former Arizona State Health Director Will Hummel will give us the update on the latest COVID-19 numbers. Plus, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice talks about the uptick in airline travel. Buckmaster during the noon hour Wednesday on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Yes, we have anywhere in the world live listening. It's at buckmastershow.com.
Tucson, we're back and we're on the air now with Kathleen Erickson, CEO of the Downtown Tucson Partnership. Kathleen, how are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you, Zach?
I'm doing well really excited for this conversation. By the way, this segment is sponsored by partners that we really appreciate, Vantage West Credit Union. We do Thrive segments where we focus on community leaders who are doing well by supporting our community and even more so now through COVID-19. We appreciate everything that Vantage West is doing. Much like Kathleen, the reason why you're on the show today is because I appreciate what you've done and really captaining an effort over multiple rounds of $250,000 of a capital infusion in downtown restaurant and retail. Tell us about that and how you got it done.
Okay, great. Well, under the program, it's a gift card incentive program, and people buy a gift card worth $35 for only $25. And that $10 incentive is made possible through the support of a sponsor. So far, we've had a number of sponsors come up. In fact, this round coming up on Friday at noon will be sponsored by Halualoa Companies. So far, we have invested, as you said, $245,000 directly into downtown businesses. After this Friday, we will have successfully raised $280,000, all from private dollars.
Incredible. And these are people that are going in and, you know, basically saying, I'm going to, you know, buy X amount of dollars at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can't spend it now or I'm not ready to spend it yet, but I've already given you the money and I'll come by later, you know, when either you're open or I feel comfortable to do so. And I'll have a wonderful meal from something that I invested maybe a few weeks ago or whatever the case may be. It's an amazing concept. And it's been matched too by, like you said, companies who have wanted to invest. Why do you think this program was so successful?
Because I think that it just speaks volumes about Tucson and how we care for one another and we care for small businesses. Many of the companies that stepped up, for instance, this one coming up, Halualoa Companies, I didn't even request this of them. They stepped forward on their own accord and offered the money to sponsor the program. People see that the money that they invest into the program, which is $12,500 for each round, that is going directly into the businesses, and I mean within days. So when people buy the cards online, those orders are all calculated up, and then DTP staff gets on the phone and places bulk orders with the individual restaurants and businesses. So we may say, hey, Hotel Congress, we need to buy 70 gift cards or 30, or, and you know, the the range of businesses. We have over 60 businesses involved in the program, and it's more than just restaurants. It's museums, breweries, boutiques, hotels. It's helping people get through this cash crunch that they're faced, and it is literally making the difference between staying open and having to close the doors.
It's huge. Is there an example, even if you don't name the restaurant or retail company, is there an example that you can give of a company that said, you know, I tangibly have been able to either stay open or cover payroll or do something because of this DTP program? Do you have a success story you can share?
I do. Thank you. So we receive beautiful emails all the time, and this has really helped us to forge a very close relationship with the downtown businesses. And one email that I received just yesterday was from Mark Jorbin, the owner of Cafe A La Carte. You remember Cafe A La Carte?
Mm-hmm.
The burritos and the desserts and
so
all that.
Good.
The lovely food with the gorgeous ambiance outside on their outdoor cafe. He wrote in an email to me just yesterday, and I have it right in front of me, actually, because I'm sending a press release. Downtown Tucson Partnerships gift card program has been an amazing lifeline during this global crisis. We are so fortunate to be able to take part. The additional funds have been crucial to our business survival as we navigate through these uncertain times. The sales have far exceeded our expectations, supplying an extra cushion at just the time it was needed.
Mm. That's huge.
And that's synonymous with everyone that's participating.
Wow. Kathleen, is it fair to say that restaurants and retail located in the university and downtown area within your district have been hit in a bit of a harder way than maybe other restaurants and retail in different parts of the city?
Gosh, you know, that's hard to gauge. I think, you know, worldwide, this has just hit retail in such a significant way. And we're so grateful that as of up to this point, no one has closed their doors yet.
Wow, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I would just imagine, you know, that there's obviously a lot of like housing stuff going up downtown, but downtown is still very destination driven in terms of you got to drive there and park there and walk there. And those are a lot of barriers that I think other restaurants and retails, you know, maybe didn't have to deal with in the same exact way. So I think, to me, I'm editorializing now, Kathleen. I think this is so crucial. How can people participate in the next round?
So this Friday at noon, the gift cards will go on sale. So just sign on to downtowntucson.org. I do recommend that you sign on right at noon, though. That's when all the cards, the 1,000 cards, will be released, and they do notoriously sell very, very quickly.
I mean, we're talking in minutes. It's crazy.
Yeah, 15 minutes one time.
That's
14
nuts.
Minutes. if I could, you know, I just wanted to go back to your comment about the downtown businesses, and I just wanted to give a shout out to Rio Nuevo and how much they've really supported the downtown and everyone in their district in terms of incentives, and then also this gift card program. So these types of programs, I think, help to actually give a step up to the businesses that are located downtown. But more so than even what Rio Nuevo is doing, what we're doing, what the city or county are doing, which all of them are doing programs and incentivizing some financial boost for the businesses when they need it most. More than that, even, is this ability for these businesses. It's so exciting to see, really, the creativity that these businesses have. They've been able to pivot in a moment and really take a look at themselves and reinvent their organizations. And the Downtown Tucson Partnership has done the same thing, too. You know, we had a strategic plan that was all lined up about what we were going to do, broken down by the year and then even down to the month and week of what we're going to be working on. Very, very focused. We had to step back and say, okay, what do? We need to respond and recover was the first phase of this recovery that we're going through. And now we're getting ready to adapt and reopen. I see the businesses going through the very same thing.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And Kathleen, that's a great segue to, as time ticks down, we've got about a minute, minute and a half. How can we support the recovery of the downtown area even further? How can we help overcome this COVID-19 time?
Mm-hmm. When the community is ready and when they feel safe, come back downtown. Patronize the businesses. If you do not feel safe to do that at this time, then purchase gift cards. Write positive reviews for businesses in the downtown.
Right.
Those are the two main things that I could say that you could do right now.
Kathleen Erickson, CEO of the Downtown Tucson Partnership. One more time, the website to go on Friday at noon, right at noon, to participate in this capital infusion program into downtown businesses, Kathleen.
Thank you. It's downtowntucson.org.
downtowntucson.org. Kathleen, thanks for captaining this and for championing downtown business and retail and for all your support. And we'll certainly be back downtown again soon.
Okay. Thank you, Zach.
Thanks, Kathleen. Be safe. And that is our conversation with Kathleen Erickson. That wraps us up today. A fast-moving hour that covered a lot of local ground. We'll be back same time, same place. You know we'll be here, 9 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, here in the 1030 The Voice studios to talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Hugh Hewitt coming up right now. Bill Buckmaster at noon. And so much more. Stick with us the rest of the day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care, Tucson.
We're all living in challenging and uncertain times. But one thing hasn't changed. At Fellowship Square Tucson, the health and well-being of our residents is our one priority. Our caring and experienced staff have been highly trained to put into place carefully planned and thorough measures to keep the ones you love safe. And if you need us, we're there for you. Call 833-944-1668 or visit fellowshipsquaretucson.org.
1030 The Voice. In times of crisis, information is vital.
Will Hummel, the Arizona Department of Health Services director from 2009 to 2015, what is your take on this?
The predictive model is looking very, very good for Arizona, the reduction in total number of deaths. The other is that we are going to be fine with our hospital capacity and our ICU bed capacity.
Trusted local news and talk about coronavirus. 1030 The Voice.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.